Everyone, welcome to today's Society of Evidence-Based Policing conference. Thank you all very much for coming along. There are obviously a few more sessions to come over coming weeks, so if you are interested, please do go to our website, which is there at the bottom of the screen, and obviously membership's free, and you can sign in and register for whichever ones you fancy. We're very lucky today to have Dr. Chris Posh from the UCL, a lecturer at UCL, and Professor John Jackson from the Methodology Department at the London School of Economics. They're going to talk to you today about a really interesting project exploring police officers in the classroom. So I'm sure they will be providing you with some really interesting work. And from there, I will hand over to Professor John Jackson to introduce the research.
Hello, so welcome everyone. I'm going to do just a very brief introduction. I'm going to talk about the study objectives, the theoretical background, and then I'm going to pass over to Chris with the findings. I'm not going to use slides, so it's just a quick kind of run through on what the motivation of the study was and what the theoretical background was. So just to talk a little bit about the motivation. So we began with the idea that contact with the law in adolescence is crucial to the development of judgments about the legitimacy of legal authority across the life course. Research into legal socialization shows that people as they grow up learn about authority, rules, rights, responsibilities, first from the parents, second from their teachers, and third from legal officials, such as the police. Now, it's also useful to think about every police citizen encounter as a teachable moment. So encounters and the lessons that people learn from them might be particularly important when people are learning during adolescence and early life about law-related values. Now, in the context of young people, encounters with the police may tend to be more of a regulatory rather than service or light interaction variety. And research has shown that regulatory encounters may have more negative effects on trust and legitimacy compared to other types of contact. So putting all this together, there's this idea that adolescents with more frequent interactions with the police that tend to be of a more regulatory style may tend to develop more antagonistic views about the law and the legal institutions as they grow up. So how, therefore, can we somehow engineer positive, and by positive we particularly mean procedurally just, more of which in a second, interactions between the police and young people, and in particular in young people's own educational space. So we wanted, when we were designing this study, we wanted officers not to be involved in an enforcement capacity. They were not to be there to be searching young people and maintaining order. They were not to be communicating deterrence related messages. We wanted the focus to be on education and building confidence. So does having police officers engaging in schools in a more humanized, or at least on young people's own turf, help foster the type of positive experiences that generate a mutual sense of trust and legitimacy? So Chris is going to tell you the results of the study, but let me just quickly talk a little bit more about the theoretical setup. And most of this is to do with procedural justice theory, which helped guide the design of this study and this project, its goals and its tools, it's the nature of the intervention. So, what is procedural justice theory? The core insight is that in interactions between police and power holders, people want fair treatment. They're sensitive to whether authority is exercised in fair, transparent, and unbiased ways. Four aspects of procedural justice seem to be important. So voice, if people want to be able to give their own side of the story. Neutrality in decision-making, unbiased, objective decisions, not shaped by implicit or explicit bias or preferences outside of the law. Treatment with respect and dignity, and displaying trustworthy motives. So procedural justice theory says that this stuff is important, but the theory goes much further than this. And I want to mention four things. So why is procedural justice so important? What does procedural justice do? Evidence for the applicability of the framework among young people, and procedural justice and legal socialization. So first and foremost, why is procedural justice so important? Three reasons. So people, we can be more confident in a procedure if we think decisions are being made in a neutral and unbiased fashion. Procedural justice also demonstrates that power is used appropriately, and it does so at an immediate and interpersonal level. So the law and its coercive apparatus are embodied by the officers that people are interacting with. And perhaps most importantly, procedural justice expresses shared group membership, conveys a sense of status and inclusion to people. So what does procedural justice do? Well, procedural justice strengthens the social bonds between individuals and institutions. And we can think about these social bonds as revolving around notions of trust, shared group identity. These social bonds motivate a sense of legitimacy, that the police and the law have the right to power, the right to dictate appropriate behaviour, and are morally justified in expecting cooperation and compliance. Now, it's important to say that the underlying theory says that legitimacy helps to develop a healthy relationship with the law based on mutual understanding and respect, rather than an unhealthy relationship characterized by animosity and mistrust. So the idea is that the former, i.e. legitimacy, is related to support and compliance, and the latter is related to cynicism, disobedience, and defiance. So the idea is that legitimacy helps promote a normative mode of compliance and cooperation, and these normative modes are more stable and more sustainable than modes of policing based on deterrence, sanction, and fear of punishment. And really importantly for this study, there's every reason to suggest that these processes will be stronger amongst young people who are learning about the world and how it works and their place within it. So what about the evidence base? So it's a strong evidence base, although it's not conclusive, over all areas, including with research with young people. I should say it's dominated by observational work, which precludes the ability to engage in causal inference. But there is strong evidence from a number of different jurisdictions around the world of the prioritization of friendliness, mutual respect, and empathy, strong correlations between encounters, fairness, trust, and legitimacy among youth samples, and evidence linking procedural justice, trust, and legitimacy to cooperation and compliance. For example, young people who hold the police legitimate tend to report lower levels of offending and or more negative views of offending behaviour. So the final bit before I pass over to Chris, who will give you some data, talk about the design, is the importance of procedural justice to legal socialisation. So the idea is that in the legal socialisation literature, encounters with officers are key moments. It's in the legal socialization of young people, which has been defined as the process whereby people develop their relationship with the law via the acquisition of law-related values, attitudes, and reasoning capacities. So young people learn from the police not only or even primarily what the law is, but what it represents and how they should interact with legal and other authorities. And the idea is that at these crucial moments as people are growing up, and learning about the world, procedural justice promotes the internalization of appropriate legal attitudes and norms. So it could be a general value internalization. For instance, you should treat others fairly. And it also it could be the appropriateness of relations with institutions. So a sense of reciprocity. They do right by you, so you should do right by them. And this is kind of instilled by the values of fair process, which people see embodied in how they interact with police officers. Okay, so I'll stop there and pass you over to Chris, who is the mover and shaker of this project.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chris Bush. Thank you for being here. And thank you for John for this excellent introduction. I will share with you my presentation now. Just a second. It worked 2 minutes ago, so it should work now. Okay, so I will focus on the main findings from our research, and I would like to also emphasize that this research has been published. So if you want to learn more about this, there's a published report which came out 2 months ago in February. So if you're interested in more details about this, then you can read that report. But I will summarize the main findings of this Police in the Classroom project, how it developed and so on. So again, this presentation will summarize the report that we published a couple of months ago. I will discuss the robustness of the research design and what were the different steps that we took and why we did that, because I think that because we are focused on evidence-based policing, if you would like to pursue something, a research project which is similar to ours, then it would make sense to discuss the design steps and why we decided to include certain steps, not to include others, and so on. I will also focus on the findings, including the short-term effects of the interventions that we designed, the variability of the effects, so whether the effects were different depending on for the different subpopulations in the study, and also long-term effects, because we had a chance to also measure long-term effects. And finally, I will focus on discussion, some limitations of the study, and some future directions. So what are the unanswered questions that arose after we finished this study? So the first question is, how did we do it? And John has mentioned this, that what we wanted to achieve was causal inference. Causal inference is very, very important, because if you only look at observational data, you cannot really argue that any kind of intervention that was designed to cause some kind of effect was causal, and should you want to repeat it, whether it would produce similar results. So what we try to do is some kind of experiment, because with an experiment we can achieve this kind of causal inference. But the key for experimentation is random assignment. The idea is that you could be assigned to either of the conditions, and due to this random assignment, we can make an inference that had you been assigned to another condition, you would have produced certain results. The difficulty with this is because we did a school project. The big question is, on which level should we do this randomization? The individual, the class, or the school level? Ideally, we would have loved to do it on the individual level, because this is which can actually guarantee that if you can randomly assign each individual to either of the study conditions, then we would have the random assignment that we are after. The difficulty with this is that it's very, very difficult to attain. So it's difficult to say that within each classroom, you should randomly assign certain, within each school and within each classroom, you should randomly assign certain students to one or the other condition. And also it can cause strain within the classes. So if your best friend is in another condition compared to yours, then you might not enjoy that kind of situation, and that can have an effect on the study. The next best thing to do would be to randomize classes. So one class could be in the treatment or control condition. The difficulty with this is that there is a potential failure of implementation here as well, because for this random assignment to happen, we would need to ask teachers, and the teachers could say that I would like a certain class to receive one of the treatments. So they wouldn't do this randomly, but they might have some kind of agenda in mind that for some reason they would want certain classes to be in the treatment or control condition. So what we finally ended up doing is to assign schools randomly to either of the conditions. This is the easiest to implement. The biggest issue with this is that balance cannot be guaranteed. So when it comes to this kind of assignment, this is also referred to as cluster randomization. And on the right side, you can see the example here. So what happens is that each school is a cluster. And first, we choose whether this school is assigned to the treatment control condition. And as you will see, we had three different conditions. But basically, you need to randomly assign these schools to either of the conditions. And then within those schools, the individuals will assign to either of these conditions. However, and importantly, when we do the measurement, so when we do the survey that we sent out to the students to fill out, we will measure that on the individual level, and the analysis will be also in the individual level. The big difficulty here is that when you do this kind of cluster randomization, so when you randomize schools to either of these conditions, then there is a chance that we won't get similar students with similar characteristics to all of these conditions. So this random assignment might be jeopardized due to that. So to mitigate this, we did an additional step here, which was block randomization. Block randomization means that schools with similar characteristics were matched, and these schools with similar characteristics were assigned to either of three conditions. But what were these characteristics and what were these three conditions? So what we did first, we downloaded aggregate data from the Department of Education's website on each of these schools, and we matched these schools on 9 characteristics. So we wanted to create matched trios, 3 schools that had similar characteristics. And these characteristics included the percentage of students with free school meal allowance, the size of the school, the level of urbanization, whether it was an urban area, rural area, fringe, and so on, the local authority, the Ofsted rating of the school, whether it was a mixed school, whether there was a special, whether the school had kids with special education needs, and so on. So we chose 9 characteristics that were available online for each of these schools and matched these schools, and then these schools, which had similar characteristics to each other, were assigned to either of the 3 conditions of the study. The first condition was a control condition where no intervention happened. This simply had to fill out a survey at different points in time. The second condition was a teacher condition, where a teacher gave a certain lesson on drugs and the police. And finally, there was a police condition where a police officer delivered the same lesson on the drugs and the police. And again, these schools with similar characteristics formed this kind of trios blocks. However, we went one step further than this. So in addition to assigning these schools to 3 different characteristics and block matching them, so assigning schools with similar characteristics to either of these conditions, we also did one more thing. And this one more thing was to create 3 waves. So we not only looked at the schools with similar characteristics, we also were interested in what kind of opinions these students held before the intervention happened. That was the baseline. Right after the intervention happened, that was the intervention, and a post-intervention wave. This post-intervention wave happened 2 months after the intervention, and the baseline survey happened roughly 2 months before the intervention. In the control condition, where there wasn't any intervention, basically students needed to fill out surveys 2 months apart. And the idea there was that we could have a comparison, what would have happened had these students not received any kind of intervention, how their opinions would have changed. Because we looked at the students of similar ages, which meant that we were interested in their alternate pathway, alternate changes in opinions about the police, had there been no intervention. So again, we had these 3 different waves: baseline, intervention, post-intervention, and 3 different conditions: control, teacher, and police. And the baseline was important because the baseline itself, the pre-intervention, could establish whether the randomization was successful, so whether this kind of block randomization that we implemented worked. And also, we were interested in the initial views of the police. So without any kind of intervention, we weren't sure what were the general opinions about the police among these kids. And finally, each student was provided with an anonymized ID. This ID was important because we could use them to track each student's changing opinions over time. So the idea there was that we were not only interested in how opinions change on a group level, but we were also interested in how opinions change on an individual level. And they received this kind of ID at the baseline wave, then the intervention and post-intervention. We managed to track students over time as well, which also allowed us to get additional insight, and further, we could do further analysis here. Okay, but the big question is, what kind of lecture was delivered? What was this police and the drugs lesson, and how did we prepare police officers to deliver this? So to begin with, what we started with is to come up with a lesson plan. This lesson plan was about police and drugs. And the most important part of this lesson plan was to encourage perspective taking. So we wanted to come up with a lesson plan where kids could step into the shoes of the police, and they would understand why they would implement certain laws in a particular way. We also wanted to give voice to students so they could speak up, they could speak their minds, and they could interact with the police officer in a natural way. It had to be something that was easy to carry out for the police officers, so something that they needed to do in their everyday job and they have a very particular insight into. And enforcing drug laws is something that most police officers do, especially for young people. Most police officers engage with this kind of activity all the time. And also the last important element of this was to meet the pupils on their own turf. So instead of bringing the pupils to a police station, police officers came to the classroom, a classroom where these students felt at home. So the idea here was, as you can remember from John's presentation, we wanted to encourage some kind of procedure-just environment. We wanted to create that, and we wanted to encourage some kind of discussion and discourse between the officer and the students. So that was the lesson plan. However, we also wanted to give the police officers who were part of this study some kind of training on how to deliver this kind of lesson plan. So we designed a two-day training. This was all done, by the way, with the PSHA Association and supported by the College of Policing and the National Police Chiefs Council. So it wasn't just the two of us. They also contributed, especially to the lesson plan and the training. These were delivered by the PSHA Association and the NPCC together. But there, we had to design this kind of two-day training. And this two-day training focused on three different things. The first one was to provide some kind of introduction to teaching skills. And the idea there was that the police officers would learn the basics of how this kind of classroom interaction works and what are the things to focus on. The second important part was a role-playing exercise. So it wasn't just theory. Police officers could try themselves. They would step into the shoes of the teachers, and they would present the lesson plan to the other police officers present. Then they would switch roles, and other police officers would act as teachers and deliver the lesson to the other police officers present. So basically, they had a chance to practice this and get direct feedback in a friendly environment. And third, the examples during this training was full of procedure-just policing examples, such as how to carry out a stop-and-search activity in a procedure-just way. And also the idea of procedure justice, so how to implement these kind of interventions in a fair and transparent and neutral way, the things that John discussed earlier. And very importantly, the police officers who participated in this two-day training gave us very positive feedback. So they said that they really enjoyed these lessons. The biggest criticism that they had was that it was only 2 days. So they wanted more of this, more of these kind of training activities and more chance to try themselves out. So this was the lesson plan and the training. The next question is, what did we measure in this study? So at each point during the baseline intervention and post-intervention survey, post-intervention occasions, we gave the students a survey. This was an online survey which they needed to fill out in a computer room or on a laptop or on a tablet. And we asked several different questions. This is not a full list, but these are the things that we mainly focus on in this particular presentation. So we measured the perception of procedure justice of the police with questions such as whether the police in general explain their decisions and actions when it comes to young people. We also measured police legitimacy with items such as whether the police generally have the same sense of right and wrong as I do. We also measured cooperation with the police, so whether they would be willing to cooperate with the police in the future, such as whether they would be willing to call the police to report a crime they had witnessed. And finally, we also looked at the knowledge about drugs, because these lessons included important information about how to enforce drugs, what different drug-related concepts mean, and we were interested in whether these kind of lessons provided an opportunity for the students to learn, and whether a teacher delivered, a police delivered class would allow students to actually learn as well, in addition to improve their opinions about the police. So a couple of thoughts about the sample. You can see that in the baseline survey, so these are only the schools that participated at least in two waves of the study. You can see that there were 49 schools that participated in wave one, 48 that participated in wave two, so right after the intervention, and 26 in the post-intervention wave. Unfortunately, our study was interrupted by the pandemic, so we wanted to go even bigger than this, and we wanted to have more post-intervention data. But due to the onset of the pandemic, we started this in November, and by the time we arrived to March, we didn't have much chance to get post-intervention data, but still we had 26 schools, and you can see that there were three main areas. We started with Sussex and West Midlands, where we had most of the data from, and we had other regions such as Avon and Somerset, London and so on. But again, due to the pandemic, we couldn't get much data out of those regions. So most of the data are from Sussex and West Midlands, and roughly from up to 50 schools, depending on the different waves. Very briefly, I would like to mention how we analyze the data. If you don't have a background in statistics or if you don't have a background in data analysis, absolutely fine. I just wanted to give you an idea of what we did. Then I will focus on the main findings without any kind of statistical mumbo-jumbo or statistical wizardry there. But the idea here is that we took three different approaches, and thanks to our design, we could do all three of these. The first one was just to analyze the data as a randomized experiment. This was using a traditional regression framework. So if you randomly assign participants to three different conditions, you can just simply run regression analysis and get certain kind of results. But we weren't satisfied with that because we had this kind of block randomization in place. So we could decide to only focus on the schools that were actually block randomized, so schools with similar characteristics. So we could look analyze schools which were similar to each other and compare apples to apples instead of apples to oranges, which might have been a possibility with the traditional randomized experiment framework. Here we used some more advanced analytical techniques, such as regression with cluster error but standard errors, where we considered the errors that were within the blocks and between the blocks themselves, random intercept models, some kind of multi-level modeling, and we also matched the data to look at, in addition to the block randomization where the schools were matched to each other, we will also match individuals to each other and did the analysis that way. And finally, there was also a longitudinal element to this. So if you remember, we gave random IDs to each of the students so we could track how their opinion changed over time. So here we could do pre-post comparisons, so how their opinions changed previous to the intervention, right to the intervention right afterwards. We use difference-in-differences approaches, match difference-in-differences approaches, where we match the students and then carried out difference-in-differences, which is a causal inference technique. And we also use two-way fixed effects, which is, again, some kind of longitudinal analysis technique that can be used to derive causal estimates. So these were the different analytical techniques that we used. And now I will turn to the results. So what were the results here? So first, we looked at the impact of the intervention. And you can see on the left side of this table the different constructs that we looked at. So it was procedural justice, police legitimacy, cooperation with the police, and knowledge about drugs. We focused on two different types here. One was whether the students understood what intent to supply meant, and the second one was whether they understood what stop and search meant. So what kind of stop and search behavior should the police pursue when it comes to drugs? And the most important part here, and the on the top side, you can see the different approaches that I've just described. So it was the traditional RCT approach, a traditional randomized control trial approach, the traditional randomized control trial approach, where we could establish that the at the baseline, these schools were similar to each other. There was a block randomized trial approach and the longitudinal approach. And what you can see here is that we found consistent results for two of these five different constructs. We found consistently that procedural justice, that the intervention, so a police officer being in the classroom delivering a lesson on drugs and the police, had a positive impact on procedural justice and on knowledge about the drugs. So what intent to supply means in this particular case. For police legitimacy and cooperation with the police, the evidence were more mixed depending on the approach we use. Either we found some kind of effect or not, but the idea is that for procedural justice and knowledge of the drugs, having a police officer in the classroom improves students' opinion and also help them learn compared to both the control and the teacher condition. So police officers outperform teachers when it came to boosting people's trust in the police and also boosting their knowledge about drugs. Second one that we looked at is whether it had a different impact on different subpopulations. And we looked at several different characteristics, such as gender, ethnicity of the respondent, diversity of the respondent's neighborhood, and previous contact with the police. The important part here is that we were interested in whether this kind of intervention worked for certain students better compared to other students. Because if it does, then it might make more sense to implement this kind of intervention in certain schools compared to other schools and for certain students compared to other students. However, what we found was that there was no indication of any difference across the board. The intervention had a very similar positive impact regardless of a pupil's background, which means that should you want to scale this up, there is a high chance that it would work for all kinds of students, which is very important. It doesn't matter whether you are male, female, whether you are from ethnic minority or not, whether you come from a diverse neighborhood or not, whether you've met a police officer earlier or not, you would have similar benefits out of this program. And finally, we also looked at the long-term effects of the intervention. And what we found is that when it came to procedural justice and knowledge about the drugs, the effects were persistent. So it meant that what we found for the intervention wave not only persisted right after the intervention was delivered, but also 2 months afterwards, which indicates that there is some kind of long-term impact just after a single encounter with a police officer in the classroom. So to discuss these results, what we found is that the intervention increased the pupils' confidence in the police and helped them learn new concepts about drugs with lasting impact 2 months afterwards. The magnitude of this effect was the same regardless of the pupils' background, which is again very important if you want to scale up any kind of similar implementation of this. And it's very important to emphasize, as John did, I would like to stress, that police officers can make a difference in an education setting, but we are not advocating any kind of enforcement or surveillance capacity for police officers. So we are not arguing for police officers to be based at schools and surveil and enforce any kind of laws. What we encourage the police to do is to go to the classroom and deliver these kind of lessons in an education setting. And this can build trust in the police and also can help the students learn concepts related to law and, in this particular case, drugs. So finally, I would like to discuss why did this work and what are the future directions of research. So we identified several reasons why this could have worked. The first one is that the officers who delivered these classes volunteered to be part of this. So they were really enthusiastic and they wanted to implement these kind of interventions. The second one was a well-designed training that the officers found enjoyable. So as discussed earlier, the officers who participated in this found the training that we provided to them very useful and very enjoyable as well. In the lesson plan, we try to incorporate procedurally just messages. So the officers would be able to communicate respect and fairness to the students. And we actually asked the students whether they perceived that particular officer procedurally fair, and they perceived the officers more procedurally fair in this particular classroom setting than the teachers, which indicates that it actually worked. We also wanted to give the officers some kind of authenticity and authority brought by the topic, because police officers have a great insight into this. They could deliver this authentically and they didn't need to say anything that they didn't want to say. And finally, the last element was meeting pupils on their own turf. So going into the classroom instead of bringing the students out of the classroom setting and taking them somewhere else. Finally, some remaining questions. Although we could identify this kind of impact on the attitudes of kids, we couldn't measure any kind of behavioral outcomes. So whether they change the way they encounter police officers in the future, whether they are more or less likely to use drugs and so on. We can only speak to the representativity of the results when it comes to Sussex and West Midlands, as we couldn't include more regions due to the pandemic. But for those two regions, the results are representative. For the other regions, it's still a big question how it would have played out. We also don't know about, we don't have enough information about the length of the impact of the intervention. We know that it worked 2 months afterwards, but we don't know how long it will work, how long it will persist over time. The big question is the appropriate number of visits, so this kind of dosage. How many times a police officer should visit each school so we could reach the maximum impact? We don't have any information. These are from only a single visit. We also don't know the ideal age of the intervention. Most students who participated in this were between 13 and 16 years old, which means that we don't know whether younger or older students would benefit more from a similar kind of intervention. And we also don't know what other topics would work. We know that police and the drugs, this particular lesson worked, but we're not quite sure what other kind of topics would work in the future. Thank you for your kind attention. We are happy to answer any of the questions that you might have. Thanks again.
Sorry, I'm on mute there. Thank you very much, both of you. That was really interesting. I found it particularly interesting because one of my students actually at my previous university did a study for his master's dissertation on partnership relationships in schools and how that works. And it's quite complicated. So I'd be interested to ask you a bit about that. But we have got some questions coming up here in the chat. We've got a few, actually. We've got a comment from Beth and James from Wales, who says that she's found very similar evidence in some work that they've been doing there in the All Wales Police Schools programme. So that's interesting. Were you aware of that project, you two?
No, we were considering including Welsh schools. The difficulty was that we would have needed to translate everything to Welsh, and we didn't have the resources to do that. But I'm just typing it right now, and I will have a look at it. Thank you.
Yeah, might be good to share that, Bethan, if you can. That would be interesting, I'm sure, for the speakers. Alex Murray asking if any findings relating to characteristics of the officers and outcomes. I was going to ask the same question, actually. And will you do a longer term follow-up?
So I can respond to this. The difficulty is that we only had so many schools, which means that we had, I think, 20 schools with officers present. And we have the information of the personal characteristics of each of the officers. But for that, we wouldn't be able to do any kind of meaningful multi-level analysis. So we cannot really say. These officers had a diverse set of characteristics. So they were male, female, older, younger, in different roles and so on. But we cannot really do any kind of deep dive into whether personal characteristics of the officers had any impact or any meaningful change.
Did you have any information on their educational background at all, just out of interest?
What do you mean?
If they'd been through a degree program or any kind of previous police education. I'm just thinking about whether they were aware of procedural justice as a theory before they got involved in the project.
So most of them weren't. We did a survey after the training was delivered, and we asked them about this as well. And they said that most of the information provided to them was really new. But as we understand from our discussion with the College of Policing, now new officers who are just enrolling, they will get this kind of education. Yeah. But most of the officers who participated here had an experience of more than 5 years on average. So it means that they didn't have that in their training.
Okay, thank you. Another question here. What do you think is the most important matter that we have in consideration in conclusion?
I think the biggest thing here is that you know, there's a debate about the role of whether police should be in schools in the first place. And we really, really, really want to stress that we did not want to assess the effect of police going into schools as a regulatory kind of manner. We wanted to look at something different, which is when police officers get involved in high quality training. So it's a very different kind of interaction. So I think what the biggest take home from in terms of the study is that you know, let's look at this this way in which the police can get engaged with the schools in a way that is antithetical to the kind of stereotypical kind of image that we have of police officers in schools in America.
Yes, no, I completely agree with John, and also if I may add, so the when John was discussing legal socialization, a very important element is that there are these key teachable moments when it comes to interaction with police and kids. And the difficulty is that there are two different curriculums. One is the formal curriculum provided by the schools, which tells kids that actually you should trust the law, you should trust the police, you should rely on them. However, there is a so-called informal curriculum that students encounter. Some of the students encounter police officers, and these encounters are often not necessarily pleasant. And the idea here is to integrate interactions with the police, make it part of their formal curriculum within the classroom. And these are engineered encounters with police officers, and this could kind of balance out those kind of informal encounters, informal curriculum with the police officers. So they could encounter police officers in a safe setting and understand that they can actually trust them. And we hope that it will actually improve their opinions over time. And what we could see is that even when they encounter police officers before, the effect of this intervention was very similar. So even if you had previous encounters with the police, your boost in the confidence of the police that this intervention provided didn't change, which I think is very, very important.
So Bethan again from Wales says, are you planning on continuing this study with younger children?
I mean, I think the priority needs to be, or in our opinion, at least I'll talk for both of us, Chris can tell me if I'm wrong, is to try to replicate the study in different areas. A lot of the schools were in Sussex. Ideally, we'd like to have schools in big, you know, more schools in big metropolitan areas like London and Manchester and Birmingham, with greater levels of diversity. Whether it's with younger children, that would be interesting, definitely to look at. But I think for me, the priority would be to say, all right, this seemed to work in at this moment in time in some schools in Sussex, you know, West Midlands as well. But, what happens if we were to do this in more deprived big urban areas?
To add to this, the difficulty with younger children and the part that I didn't discuss was coming up with some kind of survey. So at the very beginning, what we did was to bring this survey to young kids, and because most of the surveys that have been done are on adults and not younger people, and we needed to come up with a new survey. And the difficulty is that the younger we go, the more difficult it will be to evaluate this, and also there are certain GDPR concerns. So the reason why we focused on school kids who were 13 years or older is because of GDPR. So that's the only way that we can actually ask them to fill out a survey without their parents being present. And I don't know, I mean, even if we could get ethical approval, I don't know how we could actually deliver this kind of research for younger kids.
Mm-hmm. So a comment on how interesting the study was, and it is really interesting. Someone says, I'm curious if being exposed to police in school will improve young people's opinions of police when they leave school. What's your opinion of that? Oh, and an additional question from the same person. Would these interactions have an impact on how officers perceive young people? For example, if similar interventions were employed in colleges, universities, etc.
I mean, one thing to say is that a really important part of the design was the follow-up. So we did the post-treatment measure and then a month or two later. I think this is a key thing, a kind of like the dosage effect, you know, how long these things are. How often should they be if we're going to try to encourage kind of long-term positive effects as kids come out of school? I mean, there is some kind of indicative evidence of an effect that doesn't disappear instantly, right? Which is good, but we absolutely need more data. Don't know what Chris has got to say.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And to the other point, when it comes to the effects on police officers, so police officers, what we did, we actually asked teachers and police officers to gauge what they, because both teachers and police officers received these surveys after they delivered the intervention, and we asked them to gauge the kids' opinions about the police in that particular area. And what we found is that the police officers had a much better understanding of how kids feel about them than teachers. Mm-hmm. So there was a much stronger correlation when it came to police officers. So they have a very good insight. And the other thing is that police officers enjoyed delivering these lessons. They felt competent and they wanted to do more. So that's a very positive thing. Many of them actually said that this was a new thing. They'd never done this before. And they would like to keep doing it. So I think that this was something that was not only good for the kids, but was also enjoyable for the police. Which is, when it comes to these interventions, it's always good to hear.
Mm. Actually, I'm just on that, Chand, if you're interested, I know there was a project in London a few years ago now. Actually, it was published in 2009, looking at perceptions of young people who had experience with police in schools and how that perception could change if they had a different interaction with a different police officer outside of that environment. It's quite interesting how, you know, the differences in terms of their perceptions of different types of officers. Really interesting study. I'm happy to send that to you if you are interested. Yeah. Alex Murray again, the DARE project found a backfire in school drug teaching. Why is this different? Good question. Yeah.
Yes, that's an excellent question. And we had this question in another session when we were presenting about this. There are two issues, I think, with the DARE project. One is that I think that the curriculum that they are delivering is very outdated, and it doesn't focus on the necessary learning outcomes that we should focus on when it comes to teaching about drugs. And then the other issue is that when it comes to teacher delivering the same lesson, and we looked at this because we were interested in whether actually the police need to be present. And what we found is that the short-term effect of a teacher delivering the lesson was actually negative compared to even the control condition. When it came to the long-term effect, that dissipated completely. So what we found is that long-term, the control and teacher condition went back to the same level. However, still the police delivery had the only measurable positive impact. So the conclusion in my mind is that if you incorporate this to their regular mundane curriculum, then it simply doesn't seem to work. when it's given by someone, an authority figure who can actually represent that kind of organization, so a police officer, then there is a measurable impact, which is a positive impact. And again, when it came to the teacher delivering this lesson, it had a negative impact at first and then no impact on the long run. So I think that's also an important finding of our study.
Would you agree that the key here is the procedural, having that knowledge is just foundation, and the subject engaged could differ as long as not enforcement, etc. So discussing bullying and safety in public spaces, etc.
Yeah, we hope so. We are now in discussion with PSHG what are the other kind of classes that we would like to include here. Bullying was not one of them, but knife crime is a prime candidate, especially in urban centers, because we would like to go, as John mentioned, we would like to go into urban centers. So that's a very prevalent topic there. Domestic violence is another thing that we were considering including here. But we are currently discussing what are the things that are acceptable for schools and what are the things that can actually be delivered by police officers. So we are in discussion with them, and we hope to be able to develop new lesson plans over the summer.
I'm just thinking in the context of the new focus on the police setting up violence reduction units and that kind of desire for early intervention. The findings that you're having are really promising in terms of that kind of work as well.
Yes, the big question when it comes to violence reduction units is that even though they have a very good reputation, if you go on, there's an excellent website, What Works for Crime Reduction, and you look at the different approaches that can be and strategies that can be employed. Violence reduction units are not one of them because they are not well studied. And the big question is whether this can actually have behavioral impact, and we don't know yet. But that's the other thing we would like to include in our next study. So we are interested in not only delivering these studies, but we look at whether this kind of intervention had any impact on the behaviors of the kids. So basically, we are in discussion with schools whether they could provide any kind of behavioral data, not on the individual but on the class level. So interested in what kind of behavioral outcomes are there the year before and the year after. And we would like to do that because on the individual level, we just cannot get that kind of information.
Yeah, thank you. What are the legal and ethical issues relating to the research study?
I mean, one big obvious ethical issue is how we've been framing this. Can we engineer positive experiences between, mutual trust between police officers and citizens? And there's massive ethical issues about this idea of engineering. There's no shying away from that fact. I don't know whether Chris has any other more specific ethical issues.
I completely agree with John. I think that's the biggest thing, that we are presenting something that's ideal. And when it comes to a pupil's individual experiences, it might be the complete opposite. If you live in a disadvantaged area, which is over-policed, then your everyday experience might be very different, and it might be even the direct opposite of it. So I think it's something that that is an issue and something that needs to be tackled. But again, what we are trying to achieve here is teaching, and it shows that it helped kids learn, which is important, and it even helped to teach them more than compared to the teachers, which was very surprising, because what we assumed was that the confidence will be improved, but the teachers would do a better job at teaching. But it seems that because a police officer is such a unique event that it makes these information memorable, which is an interesting finding. And the other thing is that overall, we would like to boost confidence in the police. And what we hope to achieve on the long run is that actually kids will be more sensitive to this kind of fairness. Because if what they see in the classroom is that the police officer is fair, then that's what they would expect in the future. And we hope that this will make them a more well-adjusted citizen, because if they are treated unfairly, then they can speak up against that. I met this police officer in the classroom, and that was a completely different encounter. I don't know whether it's wishful thinking, but that's what we are hoping to achieve.
Another question. You had mentioned that the survey was performed on similar schools. What were the similarities between them?
So these were the nine characteristics I mentioned. we had this information about each of the schools, whether they are in the same local authority, same LSOA, free school meal allowance, Ofsted rating, and so on. So these were the 9 characteristics that they were similar to each other. And what we did was a method called matching. So basically, we matched schools that had similar characteristics, not necessarily entirely the same characteristics, but very similar characteristics to one another. And that's how we matched them to each other. And what we hoped to achieve was balance when it comes to individuals. And by and large, we managed to do that in within these blocks.
Thank you. Yes, it is, Jamie. It is published. It's available on the website of the LSE, isn't it?
Yes, and the PSEG Association, and also my personal website. So there are many different places that you can download this from. Yeah.
The report's called Police in the Classroom, if you have that helps Google it.
What has the response from senior police management in the forces that were involved been?
They were very pleased. Because the results were positive and what they expected. And I think what is the most important element is that when it comes to the National Police Chiefs Council and the College of Policing, they would like to keep supporting this project. So they would like to go ahead and in the future continue with the research, but also continue with the training of the officers, because I think that's the important part, to actually train officers so they could deliver similar kind of interventions. The big interruption and the big question is the pandemic, because due to this, everything is on hold. And kids will need to catch up with a lot of learning. So we will see how responsive schools will be to this. But because what we show is that actually students will have a chance to learn, we hope that they will allow us to go back into the schools and include new lesson plans and allow more police visits maybe in the future.
I wonder if it'll have a other kind of positive unintended consequence about raising the profile of the role, given the findings you've got, which is, you know, given that a lot of officers probably wouldn't volunteer for this particular role. It's interesting that yours did, but also it's great that it's perhaps giving that role a little bit more perceived value. From Viv, if participants experienced a negative interaction with police after the intervention, would the increased legitimacy remain, or would it be back to square one?
I mean, it'd be fantastic to study that. Sorry, Chris, go on.
Yeah. So, well, thanks to this kind of design, where we could ask. So, at first, we asked the pupils whether they had any kind of interaction with the police 2 years previous to the study. Then we asked them, between whether in the 2 months from the first survey to the second survey, whether they had any interaction, and between the second and the third survey as well. And even after controlling for that, the effect was still there. So, and we will not only ask whether there was an interaction, we also asked whether it was a procedure just or unjust intervention. So whether they perceived that kind of interaction as procedure fair, unfair, and so on. But it didn't dent the impact of the intervention, which I think is something that's positive. But we are talking about a 4 months interval. So it's not a large interval, and we hope to be able to look at a bigger length, as John has mentioned. So we will see.
Andy Bryars, do you feel school-based officers would benefit from additional specialised training so this becomes recognised as a specialist post?
Chris, do you have anything?
So the difficulty is that each force handles this differently. It's very hard to make any general comment about this. The Metropolitan Police has a completely different approach to this compared to the police in Sussex. It's difficult to say, I think, from an institutional point of view. What do you think, John?
I mean, I just think that a key part of this study and potentially why it was successful was the approach that was taken to training. The PSHE, you know, helped with the materials, you know, the learning plan and all that, and helped with the training. And I think that's really, that coupled with the sort of self-selection of the police officers who really wanted to do this and enjoyed it, I think that was key to this whole thing. It just felt natural and humanized. And so if we're going to carry on doing it, it needs training and preparation and all that, but we need to take it really seriously otherwise.
Are there any plans to follow up to see if this affects future police recruitment and diversity? Interesting. Might be a very longitudinal study.
Yeah. I mean, many of these kids are 14 years old, so it's I think it would be very difficult to look at what they will do 4 or 5 years later.
I mean, a really interesting thing, if we're talking about diversity, a really interesting thing would be, you know, the skin tone, the race and ethnicity of officers who go into certain schools, you know, to see whether that kind of operates as a kind of role model. I mean, particularly thinking of kind of very diverse areas in Birmingham, Manchester, London, etc.
Yeah, so when we presented the results on cooperation, but actually there was one thing which we also included, which is engagement with the police. So we asked them whether they would be willing to follow Instagram profiles of the police, whether they would be willing to go into an apprenticeship, like the next question asked, whether they would be willing to go to a career fair on policing and things like that. And again, there was positive finding, but it was similar to cooperation, so it wasn't across the board. It depended on the approach, but there was some positive effect on that as well.
Yeah, I think there's some anecdotal stuff coming out of America actually looking at this, whether there's a relationship between police going into schools and the encouragement of a more diverse kind of group coming into the police, if they've got that positive relationship with the police within the school context. It's an interesting question, isn't it, in terms of diversity. So what if parents of children or pupils are also included in the study, especially for long term?
I get, we're setting out our research agenda for the next 10 or 20 years. I mean, you know, in principle, it is possible if there are kind of, you know, small positive effects that are long lasting on children, on young people, this can kind of, you know, bleed into the attitudes towards parents. It's certainly kind of plausible. Potentially sort of have a small positive impact on parents who may have different opinions about the police. I don't know what Chris thinks.
Yeah. I mean, there are several studies on this, especially focused on mothers, whether mothers' opinions are inherited by their children, inherited, so to speak, so whether they have any influence on their children's opinions. And especially in the US, there's a measurable impact. I mean, this would be a whole bigger and other study. But when it comes to, because the same person asked about the ethical part of this, so we actually, each of the pupils had a chance to opt out, and each of the pupils' parents received a letter about this. So the pupils could decide not to participate, and the pupils' parents could decide that the pupil cannot participate. So that was an important part of it. But 97% of the pupils decided to take part. So there was a very, very minor proportion of the students who decided not to participate.
I think we've got a couple more questions. A comment from Andrew, the Bavarian State Police in Germany have school safety officers, sworn officers who only work with kids, following them from preschool to high school. Would be great to get that evaluated. There you go. There's some more research for you to do, international work there, options.
Yeah, I will need to brush up on my German for that.
And then Bethan saying that's exactly what we have here in Wales, jointly funded by the four Welsh police forces and the Welsh government. Great. Thank you. Well, I think that just about brings us to a close, if there are no more questions. I know a couple of people, Chand, you asked if that paper could be sent. If you contact the Society of Evidence-Based Policing through the email, I will get that. Yeah, there you go. It's right there as I speak. I will forward you that. That is not a problem at all. That's fine. I can send it. But without further ado, I'll thank my speakers. Thank you very, very much, both of you, for taking the time to come and speak today. It's all very strange, isn't it, that we'd normally be doing this in a nice face-to-face environment, but unfortunately not at the moment. So I really do appreciate you coming along. Thank you for giving such an interesting and obviously promoting quite an interesting discussion as well. So thank you. And again, just want to reiterate that if any of you are interested in coming along to any other of the papers coming up over the coming weeks, please do just go on to the SEBP website, which magically appears there at the bottom of the screen, and you can register for those through that. But thank you very much, and I hope you all have a lovely rest of day, and thanks again to John and Chris. Really interesting paper. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you.